This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to Washington Watch. Great to have you with us. Coming up on today's program, the Senate is inching closer to a vote on a major overhaul of our tax system. We'll get an update from Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma. He'll also share highlights from his annual federal wasteful spending report. And does the Democratic Party's new orthodoxy on abortion leave no room for socially conservative Democrats? Terry Jeffrey, editor-in-chief of CNSNews.com, is here to talk about leftist groups targeting one of the House of Representatives' few pro-life Democrats, Representative Dan Lipinski of Illinois. Also, the FCC is busy undoing Obama-era policies. Chairman of the FCC, Ajit Pai, will be here to tell us about it and the personal cost of standing up for free speech. Also, some experts are saying North Korea's recent missile launch, we talked about it yesterday in the program with Senator Graham of South Carolina. Some are saying that the launch is more significant than originally thought. Southeast Asia expert Gordon Chang will be here for that conversation. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, I've been talking about this all week, but here at the Family Research Council, we continue our year-end matching challenge. Through the end of December, any amount you donate to FRC receives a matching gift from a generous donor. Your gifts obviously support our efforts at the Family Research Council to defend faith, family, and freedom, but it also brings you this program. The Washington Watch program is made possible through generous supporters like you all across the country to the Family Research Council. Donations can be made. You can partner with us by going to TonyPerkins.com, or you can make a gift right now by giving us a call, 800-225-4008. Again, that number, and I'll give it out a little bit later, 800-225-4008, the number to call to make a matching gift contribution toward the Family Research Council in Washington Watch to make sure this program continues. All right. The Senate is expected to vote on and pass a major tax reform bill by the end of the week. And earlier this week, Senator James Lankford released his annual Federal Government Waste and Solutions Report detailing the, they're just outright ridiculous things that the government spends money on. Now, this is the third volume of Senator Lankford's report. He's entitled it Federal Fumbles, 100 Ways the Government Dropped the Ball. Now, he picks that up from his predecessor, Tom Coburn of Oklahoma, who started the Government Waste Book back when he was in the Senate. And so he's going to be joining us. They're actually still voting on the Senate floor. In fact, I see him standing on the Senate floor as I'm watching C-SPAN. They're voting on the reform bill. They're trying to send it back to the Finance Committee. That's a Democratic move to try to kill the bill. I think they've got the votes. We had Senator Graham on yesterday talking about the prospects. They're going to move to open debate and amendments later today, probably as soon as this vote is over. Right now on the Senate floor, they will what's called Votorama. It happens occasionally in the Senate where they quickly move through amendments. People can offer whatever amendments they want, and they go and onto the House or the Senate floor and debate them. That's coming up, and then probably tomorrow, possibly early Saturday, they should vote on this bill. And it looks like the Republicans have the votes necessary to pass a major overhaul of our tax reform. Our tax system, the first since 1986. So Senator James Lankford, Oklahoma, going to be with us just in a few minutes to talk about that bill and his federal fumbles. Hey, some good news out of Arkansas, and this all ties into the courts. We were talking with Attorney General of Louisiana Jeff Landry yesterday about one of the president's pick for the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, Kyle Duncan. Great, great guy. I've known him for a long time. And he's from Louisiana, worked with defending a number of pro-family bills when Bobby Jindal was governor, and then actually was with the Beckett Fund and helped oversee the Hobby Lobby case in which religious freedom was defended. Anyway, he's had a hearing yesterday before the Senate Judiciary Committee, drawing some opposition from one of, believe it or not, one of Louisiana's Republican senators, John Kennedy. And some folks are now starting to put a little pressure on Kennedy. In fact, I mentioned this yesterday and would once again encourage folks that especially if you live in Louisiana, that you should give Senator Kennedy a call and encourage him to live up to his claimed pro-life values by voting yes on Kyle Duncan. And you can reach him at the Capitol switchboard, 202-224-3121. 202-224-3121. But why, to draw the a fine point on this, on why these judicial picks are extremely important, is we're beginning to see a little balance coming to the courts. And that's in large part because of the stellar. This is one of the areas that I have to give the Trump administration I've got to give them high marks for the work that they have done in putting forth really, really good candidates. And several have been confirmed, and they're on the courts. And as that balance comes back, we see things like what just took place in Arkansas. In Arkansas, back in 2015, the Arkansas legislature and the governor there, Asa Hutchinson, ended Arkansas's forced partnership with Planned Parenthood. Remember, that was after David DeLayden released his string of undercover videos showing this baby body parts for profit scheme that Planned Parenthood was running. Today, the FBI moving forward with an investigation into Planned Parenthood. But we saw states begin to cut funding. They said, look, we're not going to force taxpayers to be a part of this. And what does Planned Parenthood do? They can't win in the court of public opinion. And they certainly can't win in most legislatures, certainly not in Arkansas and most southern states that are pro-life. So they go to the courts. Well, initially the court, kind of sided with Planned Parenthood and, put the law on hiatus, stopped it. But then the Eighth Circuit ruled in favor on Monday in favor of the rights of the state of Arkansas to cut off funding to Planned Parenthood. And so they are now moving this week very rapidly to put back in place that firewall of protection between taxpayers and and Planned Parenthood. Now, in other parts of the country, like Texas had a law struck down similar to that, this is eventually going to wind its way to the Supreme Court, which, again, is why we need justices like Neil Gorsuch and who knows what next vacancy we may have. But this is why these judicial picks are so important. The impact of this is going to be generational. This will go a long way beyond the Trump administration, and if he's followed by Vice President Pence, it'll go beyond that. These justices can sit on the court for a generation. And so that's why the one area, again, that I give this president high marks, and we're now beginning to see the Senate move more aggressively. I give credit to Mitch McConnell for beginning to do that. Senator Grassley aggressively moving these through, even though they haven't gotten the blue slips in a lot of cases. And that was part of the problem with John Kennedy dragging his feet on Kyle Duncan. I mean, of all people, the Republicans, especially those who claim to be constitutionalists should be behind this administration. All right, waiting for James Lankford to give us a call. They're still on the Senate floor. Voting is going to give us an update on that tax bill, the prospects of what's happening there, as well as an overview of his federal fumbles, a highlight of some of the ludicrous spending of the federal government, like the retirement center for chimpanzees. Yeah. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. And by the way, let me remind you folks, we are in this end of year. We've got a match in which folks can, any contribution they make will be doubled by a generous donor. And you can give us a call and we can take that donation from you, either online at TonyPerkins.com, or you can do so by giving us a call at 800-225-4008. That's 800-225-4008. All right. Still waiting on Senator Lankford. They're on the, again, they're voting on the tax reform bill, even now as we speak, a procedural move to try to send that back to the Finance Committee. That's just a tactic to try to keep the bill from being voted on, but they're not going to have the votes to do that. I mentioned this a minute ago. The FBI has reportedly decided to launch an investigation into Planned Parenthood for selling aborted baby body parts. The investigation comes after several undercover videos from the Center for Medical Progress, which shows Planned Parenthood executives discussing prices for the aborted baby body parts, including the brain, liver, and the heart. Now, last week, media reports said the FBI had requested thousands of pages in documents from the Senate Judiciary Committee's investigation of the organization. And so now, the FBI taking steps to investigate. That's good. You'll remember the Select Committee in the House that was chaired by Marsha Blackburn had recommended for an investigation because they had seen what appeared to be criminal activity. So maybe this will provide the evidence and the information and the motivation to once and for all defund Planned Parenthood, to get taxpayers at the federal level out of the business and the partnership with Planned Parenthood. All right. Coming up next, we'll work James in when we get him, if we get him. As I said, there I can watch him there. They're still on the Senate floor. But coming up next, the Democratic Party, a new orthodoxy on abortion, leaves no room for those Democrats who would happen to be in the slightest sense pro-life. What's that tell us? Terry Jeffrey, editor-in-chief of CNSnews.com, joins us next. Don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch after this.
This Christmas season, give with purpose and meaning, a gift that protects life, marriage, and religious liberty. At Family Research Council, our mission is to promote these three core values in public policy and the culture from a Christian worldview. We are working to ensure that our religious liberty is defended in the public square, that human life at all stages is protected, and that family values are promoted in our country's public policies. Your giving can make an eternal difference for your community and for our future generations. And if you give between now and December 31st to Family Research Council, your gift will be matched, meaning it will be doubled by a generous donor. And any donation is tax deductible. Give with purpose this Christmas season. Text FRC to 444-999. Again, that is text FRC to 444-999. Thank you for standing with us. FRC wishes you and your family a Merry Christmas and a blessed New Year. Having a hard time finding that right gift for your family and friends? Need some ideas? Check out Family Research Council's online store and browse the latest books, mugs, trendy t-shirts, baby bibs, tote bags, and more. Your purchase of these items will support FRC in our mission to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a Christian worldview. Some of our exclusive items include a unique in-house design DC t-shirt featuring a skyline of the monuments in our nation's capital, a cute baby bib with some pro-life flair, and a stylish tote bag with a Bible verse from 1 John 4:19 that says, "We love because He first loved us." Go to frc.org/store now to start shopping. Again, that is frc.org/store. Thank you for standing with us. FRC wishes you and your family a very Merry Christmas and a blessed New Year.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As Senior Director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. So glad to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, at T. Perkins. All right. We have Senator James Lankford joining us from off the Senate floor. Senator, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much. I'm slipping away literally from a vote series on it and glad to be with you.
I was watching you. I'm watching C-SPAN. I saw the back of your head looking pretty good. And I was just telling our listeners, you know, this is the challenge with live programming. They tell you never to do live programming with small children, animals, and politicians. But explain what's happening right now on the Senate floor.
Well, we're watching actually a procedural vote. This is called a motion to recommit. One of the Democrats has brought up a motion saying they want to be able to send this back to committee to be able to look at again, to score a different way, and then bring it back to the floor after the committee looks at it. Typically, that's a motion that's just a slowdown motion on it. We have three of our members in the Republican conference that are deciding whether they're going to vote for the Democrat motion to recommit. And there's some conversation on the floor right now with those three for them to be able to make that decision or not. So they may push this back to committee to start all over again, or this may advance based on a procedural motion right now.
Well, in the Baptist church, that's when you lay hands on them, right? Take them out back.
That is correct, actually.
Well, the prospects, though, yesterday had Senator Graham on. Sounds like it sounds optimistic that the Senate is going to get something.
It is. I'm still optimistic. Obviously, this vote will have a tremendous impact. This is a surprise to us. But as of yesterday, the motion to move on to it was unanimous with all Republicans on board. And now we'll see if that remains that way.
All right. Quickly, as I've got Terry Jeffrey waiting, I'm going to bring him in just a moment here. But you released your third edition of the Federal Fumbles. And I have to tell you, it kind of makes me laugh, but it also wants to make me cry.
It does. And it's one of those things I recommend to people if they have a high blood pressure, don't read it because it's so incredibly frustrating. We look for areas of waste and inefficiency in government and where government agencies are not doing their job or doing someone else's job. And we kind of put them into three different buckets. Duplication, where we got multiple agencies doing the same thing, wasteful spending on it, and then just inefficiency in government. And sometimes it's not spending. Sometimes it's just them doing the wrong thing. And then we try to identify just examples of that. The key thing that we push out all the time is all these things are fixable, and we try to promote different processes. Every one of them, we put out a solution when we put it out. And it's some things as crazy as We did a study of refugees in Iceland that are Icelandic refugees in Iceland. I don't know why the American taxpayer had to pay for that. We did. There was a production in New Hampshire of Doggy Hamlet, where it's a group of adults chasing sheep and sheepdogs around a field, and that was paid for with taxpayer dollars as considered art, which, again, if they want to do that in New Hampshire, that's fine. They should just shouldn't make the good people of Oklahoma pay for it with federal dollars. And some very big areas, like DOD, moved some equipment to Iraq. They moved it to Kuwait and then lost track of it, and it's about $1 billion of equipment that's somewhere in transit somewhere.
Well, I like that chimpanzee retirement center.
Yes.
Be looking into that. I got a few people I might recommend.
Yeah, we stopped experimenting on chimpanzees, and so the National Institute for Health moved them into retirement center type focus. It's about $18,000 per chimpanzee to take care of them a year. I estimated that's about the same cost of tuition on a lot of state colleges around the country. We should just enroll them in college. It would be cheaper to do that than it is to be able to maintain them.
Yeah, you're not talking bananas, are you? That's $18,000. That's a lot of money. Senator, thanks so much for joining us. I know you had to step off the floor. You got to go back there and talk to your colleagues. We appreciate it. We look forward to talking to you again.
Great. Thank you very much.
All right. Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma just stepping off the Senate floor there. All right. As promised, I want to bring in our good friend Terry Jeffrey, editor-in-chief of CNSNews.com. To discuss this new orthodoxy of the left, the Democrats, on abortion. Apparently, there is no room for dissent on abortion now in the Democratic Party. Terry, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks for being flexible there. Things breaking there on the Senate floor, as you just heard from Senator Lankford. Is this the product or the byproduct of the Obama years? I mean, long gone the Clinton era of, you know, safe, rare, and legal. I mean, now it is, it's a whole different view of abortion.
Well, it is. You know, it's interesting, Tony. If you go back to 2006, which is when the Democrats won back control of the House and Nancy Pelosi became Speaker, a key player for the Democrats in that race was Rahm Emanuel. And Rahm Emanuel, who had worked with Bill Clinton, he's a guy who's very liberal, obviously, but he was very smart about one thing. He understood that there are certain districts, particularly in the northern Midwest, but there's also some down south, for example, the one they ran Heath Shuler in back then, where they understood they needed to run a social conservative. They needed to run someone who is pro-life, even though the Democratic Party is pro-abortion, if they wanted to win those seats. And they did run a good number of candidates in that race, and they won back the House. But, you know, as you're indicating, it looks like now, basically, by them targeting Dan Lipinski, who clearly is the most solidly pro-life, if not really the only fully pro-life Democratic member left in the House of Representatives, they're basically saying, we are going to excommunicate you from the Democratic Party unless you're in favor of the legal killing of unborn children.
Yeah, and to note there on when they ran against these moderate slate of Democrats, they were against liberal Republicans, and they were able to knock them off, and that's how they were able to gain this majority in many cases. What does this say going forward on this issue of abortion between the two parties?
It's a huge issue. You know, people who understand it cannot help but be pro-life. I think that I honestly believe that people who are advocating abortion legally know in their hearts it's wrong. I believe there are members of Congress who vote pro-abortion who know it's wrong. And I think really one of the messages the Democrats and the interest groups that are trying to get Dan Lipinski are trying to send by going after him is saying, look, if you think in your heart that you ought not to kill unborn babies, don't do anything about it in the Democratic Party. Don't do anything about it as a member of Congress, because we're going to take you out. It's really sort of a form of political terrorism. And there's a bigger, on the bigger political equation, the coalition, the old Reagan coalition that makes it possible for the Republicans to put together a national majority is dependent on Northern Catholic social conservatives, which is exactly what Dan Lipinski is. And the fact that Donald Trump won that vote, he won it in Wisconsin, he won it in Michigan, he won it in Pennsylvania. None of the liberals, none of the Democrats, none of the people running Hillary Clinton's campaign expect Donald Trump to win that.
That's right. Hey, Terry, we got to leave it there. We're up against a break. But
hey,
it
thanks,
says a lot about the future. Folks, don't go away. We're back after this.
Spend a semester in Washington, D.C. with Family Research Council through our internship program. You will get a chance to experience the rich history and culture of our nation's capital and be immersed in the most important political debates of our day by working to advance family values in a professional work environment under the oversight and mentorship of FRC experts and scholars. The internship program includes free housing just a block away from Capitol Hill and the Supreme Court, as well as a paid stipend. Learn more at frc.org/internships.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Urnakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers. The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along. All right, the Senate still dealing with this motion to recommit the tax reform bill to the Finance Committee. Again, as Senator Lankford mentioned a few moments ago, normally a procedure just to slow things down. This time, we're really trying to kill it. So we'll see. Looks like they just picked up the votes they needed. And so it looks like it will proceed on forward and will not go back to the Finance Committee. All right. As we were talking earlier, during the Obama administration, especially during the last 2 years, we saw a significant effort to try and control the Internet and what goes on in the Internet, on the Internet, and through the Internet. And it becomes really a free speech issue. Joining us now is the chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, Ajit Pai. He has been working to repeal regulations governing what's known as net neutrality, deceptive name. He is trying to make sure that the Internet communications remain free and fair and accessible to everyone. Chairman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on again.
Well, have things settled down for you? Are they still as intense as when you took the spot?
It's a little bit intense, to say the least, these days. But nonetheless, I'm keeping my eyes focused on doing my job here at the FCC as best I can.
Well, let's talk about the repeal of a lot of these regulations put in place in the last 2 years, especially of the Obama administration. Are we seeing progress?
I think we are over the last 10 months that we have righted the ship, and we're focusing on trying to get more Americans, especially rural and low-income Americans, online. We're modernizing our rules to get government out of the way and let the marketplace do its magic. And otherwise, we're trying to promote and speak out about the importance of free speech and free expression and make sure that those constitutional values endure for another generation of Americans.
Now, you mentioning that just a couple of days ago, you you talked about the social media outlets like Twitter that are exerting control over content, offering often content they disagree with. What do you see happening there in the social media world?
Well, it's distressing. And one of the points I brought up is that you should practice what you preach. And if you come to the FCC and you preach that you need to regulate, FCC, these internet operators and have heavy-handed regulations that were developed in the Roosevelt administration applying to the internet because we don't want any gatekeepers deciding what we see, well, you can't in your own businesses then turn around and not practice that and start screening out. I gave the example of Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn when she announced her Senate run and had a pro-life ad, part of her ad, and Twitter restricted it initially until there was a public outcry about it. And so to me, at least, you've got to have an open platform. That should apply to everybody then.
So do you, from your vantage point at the FCC, do you think that you will be able to use that platform to ensure that these other platforms, which in many ways are private, but they use the internet, will remain open and fair for all people?
Well, for better or worse, the FCC's authority doesn't go that far, and so I'm not suggesting that the FCC regulate those platforms. What I am saying is that they should be consistent. And if others, you know, elected officials in Congress or the Federal Trade Commission or someone else wants to look into transparency requirements or the like, that's something that they may want to consider, but if they want to. But from our perspective anyway, I was just trying to highlight the fact that you've got to be consistent and practice what you preach.
Does that concern you, though, Chairman Pai, that when you see stuff like Twitter, you know, someone working at Twitter who now this was not a corporate decision, but they deactivated the president's Twitter account for a brief time. I mean, are those not concerning things, the possibilities that are there?
It's one of the things that I've heard a lot about, concerned about, and it's, as somebody once put it to me, it's sort of funny how all these seem to go one way, that it's people who tend to have a particular political affiliation or persuasion who seem to be getting the brunt of this sort of decision, and you know, that's one of the reasons why I think it's important for everybody to have an open and honest discussion about it.
Well, speaking of that open and honest discussion, what are your thoughts about the harassment and the threats and the really unfiltered rage that often dominates social media, which, by the way, your family has been subjected to?
It's just outrageous, and I cannot say in strong enough terms how much I reject this notion that if people are passionate about an issue, exercised about a policy judgment, that they should go after public officials personally and their families, and particularly the families. I mean, in my case, it's been extremely unpleasant, to say the least, to have to think about these things and worry about them. But even today, there are criminal charges filed against a man who called up Congressman Katko in upstate New York and said, if you don't vote for net neutrality, I will kill you and your family. I'm almost quoting him. That's just outrageous. It has no place in civilized society. And in the speech I gave yesterday, I talked about the fact that I raised the question, is social media good or bad for society in this regard? Because it allows us to have conversations online, which is good. But on the other hand, we don't actually try to seek common understanding. You don't look someone in the eye and treat them civilly. And it seems to be contributing to this politicization and intensification of the debate, which may or may not be healthy for society.
I think you are absolutely right. We're losing civility, the ability to have conversations that, are civil and have the ability to reach consensus. Chairman, we're out of time. I want to thank you for joining us. And again, I want to thank you for the great job you're doing there at the FCC.
Oh, my pleasure. And thanks again for having me on.
All right. The chairman of the FCC, Ajit Pai, doing a great job over there, by the way. Okay. When we come back, we're going to take another look at North Korea. This is one of the most significant threats we've seen in years. We're going to be joined by Gordon Chang, expert on the Asia region. Don't go away. We're back after this.
Are you interested in making a real impact in public policy and culture? And are you looking for an internship experience at a Christian organization in the heart of our nation's capital? If the answer is yes, spend a semester in Washington, D.C. with Family Research Council through our internship program. You will get a chance to experience our country's rich history and culture and be immersed in the most important political debates of our day. Further, you will develop the skills required to advance faith, family, and freedom in our nation. Family Research Council's internship program includes free housing just a block away from Capitol Hill and the Supreme Court, as well as a paid stipend. As an intern, you will gain an invaluable public policy experience in a professional work environment under the oversight and mentorship of FRC experts and scholars. Learn more about the FRC internship program at frc.org/internships. Again, that is frc.org/internships.
Having a hard time finding that right gift for your family and friends? Need some ideas? Check out Family Research Council's online store and browse the latest books, mugs, trendy t-shirts, baby bibs, tote bags, and more. Your purchase of these items will support FRC and our mission to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a Christian worldview. Some of our exclusive items include a unique in-house design DC t-shirt featuring a skyline of the monuments in our nation's capital, a cute baby bib with some pro-life flair, and a stylish tote bag with a Bible verse from 1 John 4:19 that says, "We love because He first loved us." Go to frc.org/store now to start shopping. Again, that is frc.org/store. Thank you for standing with us. FRC wishes you and your family a very Merry Christmas and a blessed New Year.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go. Take a look.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Yes, it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. And by the way, speaking of Christmas, if you're looking for that unique Christmas gift, check out the FRC store. Got a lot of different things there. In fact, you can check it out. Go to TonyPerkins.com. Follow the links over. All right, as I mentioned at the top of the program, this week we are launching a matching gift challenge. Any amount you donate to the Family Research Council as we move toward the end of the year will be matched by a generous donor. This program does not receive any government money. We are 100% supported by partners like you across this country. And if you make a donation right now, it'll be doubled. So you can either do it online, go to TonyPerkins.com, make a contribution, or you can give us a call right now, 800-225-4008, 800-225-4008. All right, we talked about this yesterday. North Korea has test fired a brand new intercontinental ballistic missile, which experts say show a major advance in technology and a much more significant threat to the United States. Joining us now is Gordon Chang, columnist, commentator, an expert on Southeast Asia. He is best known for his book, The Coming Collapse of China. Gordon, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much.
Yesterday, we had Senator Lindsey Graham on the program, and he was discussing this latest launch, and he said military engagement could come, or activity could come, as soon as this week. I want you to hear what he had to say on the program yesterday and get your thoughts on it.
I'm hoping that the signal we're about to send in a couple of days will make China realize that they've got a choice here. No other president has pushed China like Trump. No other president has been this bold in terms of, I will never allow them to hit America with a nuclear weapon, and if I have to destroy the regime, I will. Trump is doing things that other presidents haven't done. He has got no place to kick the can down the road, and they're miscalculating President Trump in North Korea and China. And if there's going to be a war, it's going to be in North Korea's backyard, not America's backyard. And let me tell you who wins that war. We do. It will be costly, but we're going to end this threat to our homeland. Donald Trump is right, and I've got his back.
So, Gordon Chang, what message might the United States send to China?
Well, I think the message there is that the United States is prepared to use military force. And, you know, during that interview, which was terrific, Senator Graham talked about oil being perhaps the only way to push the North Korean regime and getting China to cut off the flow of oil to Pyongyang. This is something that our ambassador to the UN, Nikki Haley, talked about within hours of your interview of Senator Graham, when at the emergency session of the Security Council, she talked about how if China doesn't cut off oil, we will take the situation into our own hands. Now, I think there are things that we can do well short of military force. President Trump has the September 21 executive order, which is a big step forward. So maybe war talk right now is a little bit premature, but nonetheless, clearly this situation is heading to a crisis.
So, Gordon Chang, I guess it's probably been 2 months since we talked about this, that you and I talked about it. How significant is the threat in terms of this new missile, the technology we've seen here with this latest launch?
Well, this missile, the Hwasong-15, can travel much further than the missile tested on July 28th, which up until then was the longest-range missile that North Korea had launched. That was the Hwasong-14. Clearly, the North Koreans are making fast progress. And if they can't do it now, within, let's say, 9 months, maybe 15 months at the outside, they'll be able to hit any part of the United States with a nuclear warhead. This is a fast progress. I don't think that the North Koreans are doing this on their own. And so I believe that the Trump administration needs to ask countries like China where North Korea is getting all the technology that threatens Americans.
Where do you think they're getting that from?
Well, we know that a lot of it does come from China. So, for instance, the missiles that North Korea fired on July 4th and July 28th, their first two ICBM launches, those were carried to the launch sites by Chinese vehicles. And it appears that China has supplied the technology for North Korea's most advanced missiles, more advanced than the ones they fired in July and more advanced than the ones they fired this week. It looks like that those advanced missiles are variants of China's JL-1 submarine-launched missile. And we know that over the course of decades, Chinese enterprises have been supplying components, equipment, and materials for North Korea's nuclear weapons program. So we have a lot of questions we should be asking the Chinese. And unfortunately, previous administrations really did not do so.
So is China using North Korea as a surrogate in trying to provoke the United States?
I think that that certainly is the case. I mean, we see China weaponizing North Korea. Now, there are a lot of elements to the Chinese state that are doing this, basically the military. Also, there are a lot of elements of the Chinese state that realize that this policy is folly for China. But nonetheless, we have, for instance, the Chinese military helping the North Koreans, weaponizing them, and threatening Americans at the same time. And so this is something that we have got to talk to China about and deal with the Chinese in the harshest terms. Because if we don't do that, future generations are going to look at us and wonder why we did not protect our own people.
Dr. Gordon Chang, my guest, we are discussing the issue of North Korea and this potential showdown that is upon us. And as Senator Graham said yesterday, the can has been kicked down the road until there is no more road, and so it has to be dealt with. But I want to go back, Dr. Chang, to the end game here. What could North Korea and China be after?
Well, I think that, you know, they got different goals. So, for instance, the North Koreans, their goal, and this has been the goal since the beginning of the Kim regime in 1948, has been to rule the entire Korean peninsula. And, you know, a lot of people say that Kim Jong-un, the ruler of North Korea right now, all he wants is security. Well, yeah, of course he wants security. He wants regime preservation. But also, in order to preserve his regime, I believe that he's got to achieve the core goal of the Kim family, which is destruction of the South Korean state. And I'm worried that once he becomes confident in his arsenal, he's going to use the prospect of the destruction of American cities to get us to break our mutual defense treaty with South Korea, then get our troops off the peninsula, 28,500 of them, and then he'll be free to intimidate South Korea into submission. This is when the period of miscalculation becomes exceedingly dangerous.
And I think if we would have continued the policies that we saw in the previous 8 years, that that plan would have worked for him.
Well, it's certainly they were well on the road to doing that. But this is more than just last 8 years. We've had a succession of presidents who have failed miserably at North Korea for various reasons, some of them good, some of them bad. But they have all not protected the American people. And so what we have now is a situation where President Trump is faced with some very unpalatable choices. There perhaps are no good options going forward, as you can infer from Senator Graham's words yesterday. But nonetheless, that's the way the world is at this present time. And President Trump can't shrink from that. And so, therefore, he's got a big, big challenge, bigger than any American president has had since the beginning of World War II.
Wow. Since the beginning of World War II, you put it that significant of a challenge.
Well, yes, because, you know, a lot of people think, oh, you know, if we have a strike on North Korea, it's going to be the North Koreans versus the Americans. And as Senator Graham is said in that clip you played, we're going to win. But, yeah, that's one scenario. But another scenario is the Chinese actually do what they say they will do, and that if we strike North Korea first, the Chinese will come in and aid North Korea. And so we could have a war between the United States on one side with Japan and South Korea, and with North Korea, China, and perhaps Russia on the other. So this is a much bigger conflict than I think most people say. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but I'm saying that's a realistic possibility of something that could happen if we strike North Korea first.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Thursday afternoon. Check out the website, tonyperkins.com. Dr. Gordon Chang, columnist, commentator, and expert on Southeast Asia, my guest in this final segment. He is also the author of The Coming Collapse of China. We're discussing the pending showdown. We don't know how it's going to turn out between the United States and North Korea. I guess the ideal situation, Gordon, is for China to say, okay, this isn't going to turn out well. So we're going to exert pressure on North Korea and tell them to knock it off.
Yes, and this is basically President Trump's underlying plan, because what he's put in place since this spring is a campaign to cut off the flow of money to North Korea. If they don't have money, they can't launch missiles, they can't detonate nukes, and Kim Jong-un can't engage in gift politics, which is the giving of luxury items to senior regime elements to retain their loyalty. So this is a point where Kim Jong-un, or at least the people around him, are going to realize that they have no choice but to give up their weapons. You know, a lot of people say they'll never do that. Well, they'll never do that under the current set of incentives that they have. Mm-hmm. But what President Trump can do, and he signaled that he will do, is change those incentives dramatically so that the Chinese and the North Koreans will have to do the right thing.
So if this comes, this, you know, worst case scenario that you play out, the China drawn in to defend North Korea, potentially seeing Russia, they're an unknown in this. You have the United States and South Korea. Who else comes to the side of South Korea and the United States?
Well, Japan would. I mean, the Japanese are threatened by the North Koreans. Japan, although they don't call it a military, they call it a self-defense force, nonetheless has a very capable military. And we work with the Japanese very closely. Unfortunately, Japan and South Korea don't have a mutual defense treaty between them. We've got one with Japan. We've got one with South Korea. But South Korea and Japan are not allies. But nonetheless, Japan is threatened by North Korea in very tangible ways, even more than we are. So I suspect that Tokyo will come in and work with us, especially because President Trump and Shinzo Abe, the Japanese prime minister, have a very deep and very good relationship.
So, Gordon, you put the time frame by which the North Koreans would be able to precisely deliver a nuclear warhead onto the continental United States at potentially 9 months. So this has to happen very rapidly in terms of the resolution of this situation.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, many people, many analysts say, that, and I agree, that the North Koreans can target some American cities at this particular time. They very well may have mastered the technology to miniaturize a nuclear warhead and made it to a missile, bring it down safely. We don't know that at this particular moment, but if they can't do it now, Tony, they'll be able to do it in a very short period. So we should be assuming months, not years. And indeed, the general assessment of the U.S. intelligence community that their capabilities, has the time frame has come down dramatically from 3 or 4 years, which is what people were saying about 6 months or so ago, to a much shorter time frame, which is what they're talking about now. Perhaps 9 months, maybe 15 months, but certainly in a very short time frame.
Wow. One final question for you, Dr. Cheng, as we look at this, you know, scenario and what is unfolding. We heard this yesterday from Senator Graham that there's going to be some messages sent even this week. Is there concern? He talked about this. I think he and I discussed this as well yesterday. There's some concern that even if we shut them down, let's say they're stopped. Is there concern that what they have developed could be sold off to terrorist groups or others that are non-state actors, which are harder for us to hit?
Well, that's a very real concern because the Iranians paid the North Koreans an estimated $2.5 to $3 billion a year. We know that part of that is for ballistic missiles. The Iranian technicians have been on site in North Korea for at least 5 of their 6 detonations. We don't know, or I don't know, about the September 3 detonation, but they probably were there as well. So Iran has links with terrorist groups, and so to a lesser extent does North Korea. And so you have, a network that it comprises North Korea, Iran, Hezbollah, Hamas, others perhaps. And indeed, you've got the Chinese and the Russians who've been supporting, both the North Koreans and the Iranians. So this is a web of actors that think quite ill of the United States.
So it not only has to be stopped, it has to be destroyed.
Absolutely. North Korea cannot be left with the world's most dangerous weapons. And once you deal with one of these bad actors, the other ones tend to slink away. What we have seen is once North Korea or Iran gets away with something, the others become emboldened. Mm-hmm. So this is a fight which is much bigger than we think right now. This is more than just the United States versus North Korea. This is the United States versus a host of bad actors.
Gordon Cheng, as always, great to have you on the program, and your insights are fascinating. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Tony.
Merry Christmas. Dr. Gordon Cheng, I mean, look, this is General Boykin and I have talked about this. He says we are at one of the most dangerous points that we've seen in modern time. Folks, we need to be praying for our president to have wisdom and those who are advising him, but also pray that the Lord could intervene here. But this is a dangerous time. All right, folks, thanks so much for joining us. Again, check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you will, partner with us. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians chapter 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.